In the first few episodes of Asian Americana, our stories have all come from California. And while the Golden State is definitely home to millions of Asian Americans with lots of rich and diverse stories to share, it's still just one part of the many people, places, and pasts that make up Asian America. Today, we bring you three stories produced at KUOW in Seattle with Next Generation Radio, a digital journalism fellowship I was a part of this spring. We'll hear from three individuals, each with their own unique experiences as Asian Americans in Seattle. We'll be talking law and poetry, development in Seattle's Little Saigon, and smoked herring. This is Asian Americana. We're still here. Our first piece was produced by me, Quincy Surasmith. Seattle native Troy Osaki is on the verge of graduating law school, but the law, he says, is not enough. Well, what about poetry?
I definitely feel like I'm kind of like impersonating a law student or impersonating like trying to be a lawyer, and I'm really just someone who wants to write poetry. My name's Troy Osaki. I'm 24 years old, from Seattle, Washington, born and raised. I enjoy writing and performing poetry, and I am also a full-time student in law school. I kind of think of it as a spectrum, so like the legal system on one end and then art on the other. One side is like direct service, while the other is this cultural shift, and being able to like move along the spectrum can be really helpful. We have a lot of supplies here and we can make signs, so we're gonna go in here.
I'm Janet Rodriguez. I'm Troy's partner.
And just like friend and activist. Like activist, community organizer.
Yeah. Counterpart.
Yeah. I told them how you speak from the heart and how I'm trying to learn how to do that.
Ironic, because your heart's all over your poetry.
As he departs the ship, my grandfather propels his legs like fins thrusting beneath him. Hair like smooth scales adorning his skull. Posture, the gentle curve of my grandfather left the Philippines during Japanese occupation. And so when I think about this narrative of peaceful protesting and like the right way to push back is through nonviolence, I think about the fact that like if my grandfather asked for the Japanese Imperial Army to not be in the Philippines, they wouldn't just like walk away. For anchoring to San Francisco docks, the United States promised to liberate his homeland from Japanese occupation, as if feeding a mouthful of bait to bite on. One person that's also had a really like big impact on like my learning has been like my grandma on my Japanese side, right? She's held on to a lot of our Japanese traditions after, you know, she was targeted for them. World War II, evacuation, forced removal, internments, imprisonment and incarceration. The state made propaganda saying that it was like for Japanese American safety, but then the barbed wire was facing in and not out. She was about 11 at the time when her family was taken and like split apart. Her dad, so like my great-grandfather, he was a Buddhist minister. He was seen as like a Japanese leader in the community, and he was separated from the rest of the family. I mean, one thing that really like spooked me out was that my great-grandfather like wrote poems every now and then and like sent them to my great-grandmother. I reimagined the world colonized by people of color, white culture, appropriated by indigenous communities. I was just like, whoa, so like other people wrote poetry in my family. And like during really like incredible, like heavy times, maybe he found comfort in writing poetry.
Conquest, my blood is a surviving offspring of diaspora. I will not plastic wrap myself in peaceful protest for you to co-opt as progress. Social movements are not wild animals you can domesticate. I will not ask the system politely to dismantle itself. The ocean has always been armed resistance.
Writing is not just a reflection of myself, but it's a reflection of the work that my ancestors have done. And so I feel like I have like a responsibility, right, to like continue their work and like their experiences of like survival and getting me here, and to like make sure that I keep pushing forward the work that they've already started.
Our second story comes from Diana Nguyen. Tam Nguyen is the owner of a popular restaurant in Seattle's Vietnamese business district, but increasing development makes for an uncertain future for the commerce and culture of Seattle's Little Saigon.
In late October of 1980, we escaped out of Vietnam by boat And then we end up as a boat people. That's when we were end up in Seattle. My name is Tam Nguyen. I also own restaurants and also involved with the community. Little Saigon District in Seattle back then is an industrial area. So no one want that part of land because I was able to have that kind of rooted identity. I felt I grew up with a very connected to the community, very proud of who I am as a Vietnamese person. We left home, and this is our four blocks that continue to call home. For kids just born in America, Vietnamese American, the mom, the dad, the family is still able to introduce them to what is mom and dad come from.
Yeah. Long time no see.
Yeah.
How is he doing?
Oh, he's okay.
He's okay.
So we're walking on King Street to the Little Saigon District. The Little Saigon smell like home. You smell familiarity. This is the last district, still very central, but extremely affordable for developers.
So this lot on 10th and Jackson West block been bought by the outsider. So they said they're going to build about 200 units.
What we know so far that we have 4 to 5 major projects being developed in Little Saigon District.
So with development, like as you see in media, as you see just a very cold-hearted look of what happens to the people that were there. You see people get pushed out.
My name is Yen Vi Pham. I am co-owner of Pho Bac Restaurant and creative director for Friends of Little Saigon. It was the timing when I met Tom, and then he started my ears perked up when he talked about the neighborhood. And this district is it's complex. It's like such a small area, but there's so many different characters in it, you know? And I know each store's and each person's history. I motivated me personally by the fact that the first generation set up the building blocks of a community, of ethnic community, a Vietnamese community, and it's our job to, my job personally, and the desire to uphold that.
Our third and final piece is by Ajua Jima Brempong. Climate change is reshaping the food landscape, making us rethink the way we eat. Warner Liu thinks fish, like herring, may be the way forward.
We're headed to Ellis Pond. We're just 3 blocks from my house. It's the top of the island. Everything flows down from here. My name is Warner Liu. I've been working in Alaska since 1976 with salmon and herring as a biologist, as a fisherman. The current job is a fleet manager in Bristol Bay. And as a side project, I've taken on smoked herring. So as you look across the pond here, it's about, maybe 100 yards to the far shore. I was a biology nerd early on. So I would go to the public library and read everything on reptiles and amphibians. Don't ask me any flattened questions, please. If it didn't have legs or fins, I didn't know about it. If it had scales, it caught my interest, caught my eye. As kids, we were just drawn to this place because there's so much life here, so much to do, so many things to catch. That's how we spend our day, just trying to chase tadpoles. So Ellis Pond is the genesis of my work in Alaska, in fisheries, in seafood, and this led me to herring. And the herring, which I consider the Rodney Dangerfield of fish, no one wants it, no one eats it, and I think it could have a better fate. Okay, I'll give you the house tour. Let's start in the back. Right behind you, this drum is full of fish oil, pollock oil. We process pollock in Alaska. And when you grind up the frames into fish meal, fish oil is one of the byproducts. In 2004, I started making biodiesel out of fish oil, and I had a string of derelict Mercedes, and I commuted to work on fish oil. It smells like a grease fire at a teriyaki joint, and I felt totally liberated driving on fish oil and not on petroleum products. And now my backyard looks like a meth lab, so come on to the back room and I'll show you the stash. Got about 1,000 cans of smoked salmon, another 1,000 of shad, and in the rest of the house, there's another 5,000 cans of smoked herring. I'm worried about my floor caving in, so I've just spreading out the cans throughout the house. In the canning process, the heat and pressure, after about half an hour, actually it's 27 minutes, the bone will go soft. I left them in the herring because, one, they're edible, they're a source of calcium, and I hate wasting food. My parents, both second-generation Chinese-Americans, my mom grew up on a farm in California, not a whole lot of money, and you may do without money. Food was precious then, and I guess that carried on to the rest of us. The current theme in all my projects is that it's something that's not being used that could be. Food is precious. It's hard to make, whether you catch it wild from an ocean or you're trying to raise it farmed in a pen or vegetables, whatever the item is, food production is difficult. And especially coming from the ocean, it's precious stuff. And I hate to see all this trouble taken, all the energy, all the human effort, and we're not fully utilizing, that's not even a good phrase, we're not enjoying it as best as we could be. Here, have a taste.
These audio pieces were just one part of the reporting that we did. You can read the rest of our stories at seattle2017.nextgenerationradio.org and find out more about Next Generation Radio at nextgenerationradio.org. Asian Americana is hosted and produced by me, Quincy Sursmith. Our opening song is We Belong by Magnetic North and Tayo Na featuring Chris Ajima. The song you're hearing with these credits is We Are the Children by Chris Ajima, Nobuko Miyamoto, and Charlie Chin. Special thanks to the entire Next Generation Radio team, including our hosts at KUOW in Seattle, Diana Nguyen and Ajua Jemarempong for letting me feature their stories, and my own Next Gen Radio mentor, Sandhya Dirks. You can visit our site at AsianAmericana.com, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter at Asian_Americana. Asian Americana is a proud founding member of Potluck, a collective of podcasts featuring voices and stories from the Asian American community. Learn more about the Potluck at podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more stories of Asian Americana. Sing a song for ourselves. What have we got to lose? Holy Potluck. Potluck. If you're looking for more to listen to, try one of our other Potluck shows. They Call Us Bruce is a show from writer-columnist Jeff Yang and angry Asian man himself, Phil Yu. They talk about the good, the bad, and the WTF of Asian American culture and media.